Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, welcome to Siempre Palante. Palante.
Welcome, mi gente, to Siempre Palante, Always Forward, a podcast that is culture-driven, focused on familia, overcoming adversity, and legacy. I'm your host, Gerardo Luis Alvarez. Gracias for listening. In this episode, you will hear from a musician that has taken his artistry to new heights through his faith in music. He believes in paying it forward to our youth through the arts. His journey hasn't been easy, but he beat the odds and he's here to share his story. I introduce to you, Deiso, el Afro-Caribeño.
We got Deiso in the house, musical genius.
It's good to hear your voice, man. Thank you for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, this is a blessing. Thank you for being part of the inaugural season. This is the beginning of bigger, better, more amplified projects. We are definitely going to crank up the volume on culture and what we bring to the table as people of color. Let's be real. Our spending power is part of that. With that, it's important that we remain at the table, not just part-time, not just temporary. Pero quiero hablar un poco de ti, man. I want to talk about you. I want to learn about you. I want you to bless the audience with who Deiso is. Tell me who you are. King es Deiso.
I'm still trying to figure out who I am. It seems like every decade I learn a bunch of new things, and every other decade I'm including that prior decade into who I am at that time. This whole Deiso project, this Afro-Caribbean soul music, what I call it, that's pretty much a culmination of all the numerous decades of different things that I've done in the music. And throughout the years, we went through the disco and the salsa and the soul and the Latin and the bomba y plena. We're always feeling like we only can do this one thing, but with all the diversity and all the culture that we have in New York City, it started making sense for me to fuse all of these elements. And that's what culminated into this world music, which is that mix of reggae with salsa and hip hop. And sometimes we feel like we have to do those things separately. I'm doing hip hop now, and then I'm doing salsa. And I'm like, why can't I just do all of these things as one world music that I think we can all understand? And it's just the way I've been communicating with people.
That's beautiful, man. And one thing that I've learned from you, you are really family oriented, very into the culture, la cultura, the seeds that were planted. And you talk about this journey of music and fusion. Tell me a little bit about that cultural influence. I'm taking it back now to early Deiso, the childhood days, the influences. Talk to me about that.
I always think about when I was around 8 years old. That's a moment that I look at. My mom is a community organizer, and she engaged youth through bomba y plena. She had a group called El Grupo Semi. I was a knucklehead. I was just running around doing whatever I felt like. Just being around all of these things, you're like a sponge. You don't think you're paying attention, but it's all in your psyche. So I remember getting involved with my mom in El Grupo Semi. My mom used to go to the New Eurekan Poets Cafe when it first launched. Originally, it was on 6th Street, and then they moved to where they are on 3rd Street. So I used to be there with Miguel Piñero, Tato La Viera, all of these amazing poets, writers, dancers, graffiti, I mean, music. So I was surrounded by all of these amazing people, Miguel Algarín, Bimbo Rivas. And these are all people that I didn't realize how much they'd inspire me later, but just being around those people at that time, they just seemed like they were crazy. But I learned so much from them about how you can make something from nothing. They used to organize plays. A lot of it was like, we're going to do a play this weekend. And they'd all get together and they'd take scraps and make costumes. And it was just really powerful stuff. And during those times, I look at a lot of the photographs of that time during the 70s, and it basically was totally destroyed. So I'm this kid running around in the piles of bricks of abandoned buildings, and there's people walking around. Heroin is rampant during that time. But then you had a group of community leaders and activists that came from Puerto Rico into the Lower East Side, and they started organizing. They started organizing for housing. They organized through the arts. The music has always been a part of the foundation of the activism. You have people like Chino Garcia that I still work with today from Charras. All these folks were a part of the Young Lords movement and the Real Great Society. They came from the streets, and then eventually they learned we need to get organized if we're going to be able to get everything we need, the resources that they really needed at that time. And I think a lot of that is still impacting us today. That was my early decade, was that New Yorican experience on the Lower East Side. And they used to do the shows at Tompkins Square Park, basically what I'm doing now. So that was like the foundation. Sometime shortly thereafter, my mom moved to Puerto Rico. She was finding herself. So she went on vacation to go find out a little more about the bomba and all the culture of Puerto Rico, because she had the group called Grupo Semi. So she was always trying to find ways to educate herself about music and that whole cultural scene. She decided not to come back. So she was like, that's it. We're living in Puerto Rico now. That was like 1978, something like that, 79. So I went from being this Lower East Side street kid running around, taking the trains para arriba abajo, unsupervised. It was crazy back then. Yeah, then I end up in Puerto Rico. That transition was difficult in the beginning because I thought I was Puerto Rican. I didn't realize I was New Yorican. There's a difference.
Deso shared with us the early years being influenced by the community of poets, musicians, and artists at the New Yorican Poets Cafe. He learned what giving back and helping the community was all about. His life would soon change as he traveled back and forth from Nueva York to Puerto Rico, trying to find the place he would call home. Faith, family, and music kept him going.
Yeah, I had to learn how to use it to engage my new friends in a way where they felt like they were inclusive. If not, basically, I'd be fighting every day. When you bring new flavor, there's also the underlying hatery that comes with that. Oh, he came from New York. He thinks he's all. So we're going to have to teach him. So I had to learn how to balance my New York flavor and then learn how to become a Puerto Rican from the island and then figure out how to make those things connect in a way that would allow me to survive in my new environment. So it was pretty deep.
Obviously, it's made you the man you are today, those influences. And I can relate to an extent in a sense where my parents came from Cuba, left everything, immigrated here. Because of them, I'm having this conversation with you. They sacrificed everything for el sueño americano, the American dream, so that their kids can get an education. Growing up, I mean, I don't look Cuban. I don't look Latino. I blend in with Caucasian, white, and that in itself, what you're talking about, it hit a chord because you went to Puerto Rico, you're thinking, you know, soy boricua, you know, I'm in the house. And then you got that rude awakening. Time out, papi. Let me show you how it's done. I feel like growing up, my own culture, my own people would look at me and I knew Spanish inside and out, man. And people would be talking about me and mira este gringuito que este no sabe nada and just criticizing, talking trash. And I'm just like, wow. And I would say something, everybody would just pause and go, oh, you know Spanish? What are you? I'm Cuban. You don't look Cuban. Well, I am. And no matter what I look like, it runs through the veins. I always feel that no matter what you look like, what's in your blood and your culture is what resonates. And that's always something that took to me. And my parents left a really difficult time in Cuba and wanted to forget. But I've always been the one to ask questions and to learn more and to be like, what's going on? I really need to learn more. Because the more you know about yourself, you can give back. You're able to really learn about others as well. It's beautiful, this country, because it's the land of opportunity. But you also got to put in the work. And I always feel that. But I always felt like I was alienated growing up. As I got older and wiser, I was even more proud to be Cubano, Cuban American. But I've always tried to learn as much as I can about my culture, because that's the key right there. Knowing where you're from, to know where you're going, but also to know who you are. And that's something I love about you, man. I admire how you take the culture and you put it right in everyone's face. Si no te gusta, sorry. It's rich, man. It's rich. For everyone listening, Deso is proud to be Latino, Latinx, Hispanic, all things. We as people, man, we bring so much to the table. A label's a label, but where we're from and what we do is everything. And you just do it so well.
It was an actual decision that I made to create using everything that I am. And that's probably why a lot of people feel like it's so natural, like it flows, because it's not forced. When you try to create something and you just try, I'm going to put salsa in here and I'm going to do, and you could tell it don't sound right. But when you're genuine about what you're creating and it's real to you, I've experienced all of these things. My mom, when we ended up going to Puerto Rico, she became a born again Christian. So we started going to churches. Me and my sister used to sing in the church. We weren't in church choir, but we used to do like duets and perform at various churches. My mom would take us different places and we'd sing and people were like, oh my God. Me and my sister grew up singing together. So that soul part, the spiritual part, it's authentic. So I'm not trying to be like, we're going to inject the spiritual because it's going to be cool. It's just part of who I am based on where I grew up and how I grew up and all of those influences, including being in the church, the spirituality of being born again. Las abuelitas de la iglesia are the pillars of our community. All of those people are characters that I draw upon. So now I have the first decade, de los locos, all the poets and everybody's cool and people are smoking weed and they're writing poems. And then I'm like in la iglesia pentecostal en Puerto Rico. Y todo el mundo, ahora vamos a orar. La hermana Fefa va a venir adelante para cantar con nosotros. And then she goes like, yo estoy aquí para cantar, pero tengo la garganta un poquito afectada. Gloria a Dios, aleluya. This is just more and more of what's becoming a part of me, being at the church and praying and holding hands with the viejitas as we prayed for all of the different needs that everyone in our community had. And then during the time I was there, I came back to New York, then we went back again. At this time, it's like the 80s. So when I came back to New York, I started learning how to pop lock. I was doing electric boogie. So early 70s, I was definitely influenced by all the genres, especially hip hop. Hip hop has always been the foundation, my heart. Rapper's Delight. Then went going into the 80s, I fell in love with break dancing and electric boogie. So I took that to Puerto Rico. I was one of the early founders, if you will, of creating a group. We used to do electro boogie. And I had a group called the Playboy Disco Dancers. So the only reason we had the name Playboy in the thing is because the t-shirts, we bought them at this thrift store and they had the Playboy on it. So we just added disco dancers on it. So I had to teach all of my group members how to pop lock and do the electric boogie before we could start creating our routines. So I had my younger brother, I had some guys from the neighborhood, and they were like, yo, that's cool. Mira eso está cabrón, papi, como tú lo haces. So I had to teach them how to do all this stuff. And then we started performing down in La Plaza del Mercado in Rio Piedras. And we actually made money doing this. People used to drop change. I used to come home with money in my pocket just from going out there and dancing hip hop. with my friends and my little brother. So then I had that combination of breakdancing, electric boogie. Now we got the gospel. We got the New Eurekan poet. So that's all these things. They're all allowing my creativity to just grow and have access to draw upon. I'm not knowing where it's going to lead later on, but these are real influences. These are real experiences that I had that I was able to bring in to this fusion. So now I'm back in Puerto Rico. I'm doing all this stuff. I came back to New York. I started getting into a little trouble because when we got back to New York, we ended up in the shelter system. We just kept starting over again. That's another thing that I had to learn how to do. I was always the new kid in the class because even in Puerto Rico, we were like gypsies. We were going from Eto, Cagua, Rio Piedra. We were in Cagua, in Cataño. Like, we went to all these different towns. So every other few months, I was like, y ahora aquí viene David Soto. Quiero que salude a todo el mundo. And I was like, I have to do this again. I have to reintroduce myself. So I hated it at that time. But I think that helped me as an adult in everything I do with the work that I started doing later on. So yeah, I went back and that's during the crack era in New York City. So I started another group. It's called the Body Rockers Empire this time. So I had the BRE. We were out there, yo, BRE, Kim. So I had a group and we used to go down to Washington Square Park and we used to once again put out the little box. It got so serious that we ended up bringing some hood dudes from the Bronx to stand around and protect the money. I give them a couple of dollars, man, so they could get their little Bacardi or whatever. And they were standing there like, yeah, what's up? What's up? Don't get no crazy ideas. But once again, bringing creativity into tragedy and still doing something beautiful throughout the crack era.
And now a word from our host, Giraldo Luis. Did you know, sabías que, the New Village Music Festival is an annual event at Tompkins Square Park in New York City hosted by Deiso himself? Claro que sí, a live and virtual celebration of diversity through the arts. Thousands have come over the years to enjoy music ranging from Latin, pop, rock, R&B, jazz, reggae, and yes, Afro-Caribbean soul. It doesn't stop there, mi gente. Free music workshops are held for all ages on art, percussion, dance, and much more. Artists around the globe ranging from Puerto Rico, Cuba, República Dominicana, Senegal, Ireland, Peru, Colombia, Italy, and Spain have performed at the festival. For more information, check out the show notes. Ya tú sabes, now back to the show.
Whatever the hood had to offer, but I would just try to pull out the beauty and the art and the music and all of that juicy good stuff because there was too much devastation around us. So I try not to focus on that too much. I try to focus on the good stuff. And I think I learned that from my abuelita. It didn't matter the circumstances. She always found something beautiful to either do, say, through the food, through conversation. She always kept everyone together. And that was the beauty of going to Puerto Rico and seeing all the underutilized resources. I lived in what they call El Mango. We ended up in a place in Coupe Bajo, Camino Los Ayalas, El Mango. That was the actual stop. When you were on the bus, me deja ahí en El Mango. Mira El Mango. Everybody knew it. It was not only El Camino Los Ayala. I think it was also El Punto. People already knew that area was known for different things. You know what I'm saying?
That's another episode.
That's another episode right there. Yeah, I ended up ahí en El Mango. And then I was like, there's mango trees. There's all of these natural resources that even the people that live there didn't recognize or realize the blessing. And I'm coming from New York. These mangoes are just falling off the tree and cars are just driving over them and smashing. I was like, oh, hell to the no. This is money right here. So I started grabbing all these mangoes, putting them in boxes. And I used to take them down to El Mercado and they used to sell them. So they used to give me whatever couple of dollars, but I used to utilize that. That was like my little entrepreneurship, my little job opportunity. So I'm making money dancing. I'm making money selling mango. I was doing my thing. That's the beauty of where we come from, the islands that our ancestors are from. I think a lot of folks, they came to the promised land, America. It was like paradise, and it was going to relieve us from all of our struggles and our troubles. And I think it's actually the other way around, because going back to Puerto Rico was actually going to paradise. And people thought that this was where it was at. And I see how people, you think they're struggling, but they're doing well. And they're living a good life, and they're happy, and they don't have all of the stresses. This is like a faster paced lifestyle that we live. The trains and the noises and the buses. Clearly, we all have our issues wherever, but the quality of life is very different over there. And it definitely is paradise. I love the ocean and the beaches. Sometimes when I'm writing songs, I think about that. I think about that Caribbean island, the palm trees and the breeze. I include that into some of my songs as well. I love storytelling like that. It's poetry and where people can visualize, they'll see this woman falling in love, not only with her, but with the music and the drum and the rhythms. It's just a beautiful thing. I love that.
I see that there's a lot of ingenuity. There's a lot of hustle. There's a lot of, I'm not waiting for you to give me the opportunity. I'm taking it. I feel it started with that first trip to Puerto Rico. The boricua in you, that Puerto Riqueño, is there, like the abuelita influence, the mom's influence, the tios, the tias, it's the primos. It's there and it's bubbling.
Shout out to the primos. When I went to Puerto Rico, my mom and my grandmother, I've always seen them doing something. They were always finding ways. My abuelita was always, you know, era vendiendo pasteles. She was making gorritas. She was selling limbel, the ices from the apartment, bacalaito, alcapurria in the park. This is early 70s, and I'm taking this in as well. So that's the hustle. Had me in the backyard ripping out these mint leaves that she grew in the backyard in the South Bronx. People would think that they're just weird. They're like mint leaves that she would sell on Third Avenue for baths and tea. So she would wrap them in aluminum foil and go with her little cart. And I was like, what? She's making money doing this? Like, it was always just amazing that utilizing natural resources to get paid and pay your bills. Like, abuelita always had money. So I guess when I incorporated that mentality, when I went to Puerto Rico, I went into abuelita mode. The same way abuelita was selling those weeds on Third Avenue, my grandmother was selling weed.
Oh, man.
She used to call it yerba buena. So yeah, I'm incorporating that story. I'm going to be working with a brother called Melvin Audaz, a great filmmaker. I'm trying to tell that story about the icon that is the women of our families, the pillar, and how they are that source and that strength of our families to help push us forward. I took advantage of this song that I wrote recently called Jengibre. I'm incorporating that story, so I'm going to do a short film paying homage to my abuelita, Celia, rest her soul. So I want to tell that story about how I've been influenced and how a lot of us are influenced through strong women in our lives that allow us to understand that there's no limit to what we can do. And when there is no opportunity, we create one. There's a lot of people that be like, oh, there's no jobs. She never asked for a job. She created her job. She didn't own a restaurant. She made a mobile restaurant. She would go to the park and just sell food. She'd had her fritters, she would put a pot, the big silver pot, and put the thing on and start frying el caldero. She would just start frying up a storm. Alcapurrias and the pastelillos and bacalaitos. So she just wake up in the morning and she created her job. She wasn't walking around, hey, I'm trying to get a job. She's like, I have my job that I created. And she just made money every day. She paid rent. She did all that. That always stuck with me. I always figure out a way to create something from nothing. Because I grew up with all these people that did that, these poets and screenplay actors, and they would just create things and do it. So that's the mindset I have now. And another reason why I created my own record label, Decora Digital, because I feel that a lot of times the industry is very limiting in how artists express themselves through music, especially when we're so diverse in the work that we do. They want to put you in this box. They're like, you're either this or you're this. And I'm the type of person that one day I wake up and I wanted salsa. You know, just like the music that we hear is very eclectic, is very diverse. Sometimes you want to listen to a symphony. Sometimes you want bachata, hip hop. We want different things. So I'm the same way when it comes to writing. I woke up today and I feel like writing a salsa. I wanted to allow myself the same way my ancestors did, to create a way to not rely on begging for an opportunity, but creating a space where I can do what I feel, what I'm inspired to do at the time, and not be limited by the powers that be to tell me not to be who I am authentically. And that's why I've been so blessed. And I think it was a conscious decision when I started this whole project, when I became DeSo, which is David Soto, the first two initials of my first and last name. So I was like, how can I take all of these things and create my own genre, which is what I call Afro-Caribbean soul music, and do that? Because once I do that, I'm not in competition with anyone else. I create my own lane. When I started doing this, a lot of my boys from back in the days, they were like, yo, I love what you're doing. You like created your whole movement. I just started thinking that music is more than just music. It's made to inspire and touch people. And we also have to be active in our communities. So I figured out, how can I do music, stay active? Because when I started doing music, I started becoming a recluse. I was just home doing music. I wasn't like interacting with people. And I had to figure out a way to be able to do music and engage in real time with real people in real life, not just behind a computer, not just posting and commenting, but actually being a part of society and try to make actual positive change through not only my music, but the work. So the music is a celebration of the work. Going through all this, I was living in a shelter and I was going to Brandeis High School. I was fighting every day. And I just didn't see the point of continuing to do that. And I was already getting influenced by the street. A lot of us weren't doing the right thing at that time. This is in the 80s. Still being creative and doing, but there's still the influence of the reality of where we live. So at some point, I decided to remove myself because that's right on the cusp of the crack era. A lot of people that were dear to my heart, they started getting involved in crack. Like, it just started getting crazy. So at that point, I removed myself from that and I left the Bronx. I went back to the Lower East Side and I started going back to church again. And it was something that I needed to do just to heal and learn and get closer to God and be more of a spiritual person. Thanks to God that through that transition, I was able to get my GED. And then when I was 17, I started working for the Attorney General's office. So I was already working for a state agency, 17. So now I'm trying to remove myself from the street life, get my life together, doing all of those things. Got married early, children. Throughout all of this, I'm experiencing all of these emotions. But through all of that, music was always still part of my foundation.
One thing I wanted to touch on, what was that moment that I'm going to church? God, I hear you. I'm going. What was that?
Deaths. People started dying around me. It was tragic. I could feel that voice. If you don't get out of here, you're next. And it was so impactful when I had gone for some time and I'd periodically stop by and then they'd run down the list of the people that had shot. Yo, you know, this dude got shot. This guy's dead. This one is locked up. Pretty much all of my friends were either dead or in jail. And God saved me from that. I was so grateful. I remember coming one time to hang out because I've always been in the music. We used to be hanging out. I'd do the beatbox. I'm singing. They always knew me. So I go visit and everybody, they're drinking and smoking weed. And I think I was still in church at that time. And they were like, yo, sing some. So I'd sang a gospel hymn. And the room was just silent and tears. And people were mid-puff. Oh, yo. Everybody just was stuck. And I could feel the peace entering the room, God's Holy Spirit entering the room, because that space was to me known for not the best things, but it was a combination of an education that I had through friends in the streets and all of that that makes us amazing. I wouldn't take it back. A lot of times people, I wish it different. I think everything was exactly the way God intended it to be.
What was that hymn?
I think it was one that I wrote. The Lord is my shepherd in Spanish. Jehová es mi pastor. Jehová es mi pastor. Nada me faltará. Cuando yo estoy en pruebas, allí tú siempre estás. Jehová es mi pastor, nada me faltará. Tú siempre me guiarás. At that point, I was dabbling in the songwriting, and that allowed me the opportunity to start writing different types of music, gospel. Then after that, I was freestyle music was real big back in those days. Ballads. I've always been big on ballads. At one point, I bought an upright piano. I have so many songs that I wrote. I never went to school to play the piano. I bought an upright piano. It was in the crib. The next thing you know, I'm writing another song, another song. That's how a lot of those songs, like the songs like Siempre Te Amaré, Quiero Volar, all those early songs with the band.
Quiero volar así como las aves junto a ti.
You know, it's like a prayer song. And it talks about looking at nature and seeing how God takes care of his own, of his creations. It talks about quiero volar así como las aves junto a ti. Those were the early creations of me fusing gospel with that Caribbean undertone, tropical, mid-tempo, with the bomba essence. Siempre te amaré, the poem that a girlfriend that I had when I was a kid in Puerto Rico, she gave me this poem, and I took snippets of it and turned it into a song, I'll Always Love You, and it tells that story about being in love with this person that you don't ever want to lose. And it talks about young love and how those first experiences of love and how you feel so touched so deeply, because we're kind of have our heart on our sleeves when we're that age. And so all those things, it's coming all together in 2005 when I started De Soy El Grupo Semi. Then I'm there working with all these guys and they all read music. I'm the only one that doesn't, and I write all the songs. And that's powerful. And they would look at some of the stuff and they'd be like, wow, do you know that they have names for these things that are different approaches to music that are not common and how these things were written? And they were like, yo, this is pretty deep. Like they were explaining to me what I wrote as it relates to chord structures and the notations of the music. And I just fell in love with that. Before you know, we're like performing all over the place. I was all over. I'm doing Univision, Telemundo. I'm doing all these clubs. One thing I would have done different, which I started doing now, I feel like I have another opportunity to do this again, but do it right. with not only the experience, but the merch. My friend Eric Rivera, who created the amazing logo, which is the Atabe. It's split in half, so it's the old and new, and it's the birth of new music. The Atabe is a symbol of fertility. It's that squatting that looks like a frog. And these are petroglyphs that you see in Puerto Rico in the caves and our ancestors left there. They have that much respect for women and for having children that they would put these petroglyphs. So he really did an amazing job. And it's showing that fusion of old and new. Everything just started to fall into place. It was like a movement that it was the right time for it. Actually, also felt like it was before its time. Now the world is ready. There was a limited scope in the 90s and early 2000s of what music could be as it relates to fusion music. And people would tell me, I used to have the sidebar conversations with people that were presenting me on stage, or just like, what is that? People didn't understand what it was like. It sounds like salsa, but it's reggae, but it also has hip hop. And then what is that? Then I had the promoters that didn't know where to place me in venues because they were like, well, we don't know if we could put you in a salsa night because you're also hip hop, but you can't be in a hip hop night. So, and that's when the New Village Music Festival was created. I had to create my own venue to be able to do what I love. And initially it was due to the frustrations of dealing with a lot of promoters that some, not all, I don't think they respect the artist as much as they should. They don't realize that the event would not be happening if it weren't for those artists that give of their time, their money, their all that. So I was just like, I want to create something. Initially it was just for me to do my thing. And I was asked to do a show at Lincoln Hospital or something like that through one of the health plan organizations. And I started talking to that dude. I was like, yo, I got a permit. It was just a conversation because I didn't really know what I was doing. I got a permit and I'm going to do this thing. I'd call it the New Village Music Festival. I had no clue what I was going to do. I was just going to go jam with my friends. This dude was like, word, you need sponsorship? How much money you need? I was like, as much as I can get. And that was it. The next day it was covered. They paid for everything, the sound, the stage. So I ended up being able to do my first music festival. It's New York's hottest music fusion festival.
Faith, family, and music not only saved Aso, but create opportunities for him through El Grupo Semi, birth of the Atabe logo, and the New Village Music Festival. We will learn how he defeated COVID through Jengibre by creating one of the most inspiring songs he's done to date.
This project that I have, Jengibre, I unfortunately in early April 2020, I was hit really bad with COVID. I was just totally devastated. Every symptom you can think of, I had it. So that was about 17 days that I didn't eat anything. I mean, I wanted to lose weight, but not like that. Not under those circumstances. So that was another time that I was reflecting. I was afraid. I thought I was going to pass away at that point. So thank God I was getting through that through prayer and love and all my friends and family coming through. Shortly thereafter, I wrote an EP called Distancia, and it's basically my first full project under my own label. So the doctor had told me, you need to breathe, you need to work your lungs. I was like, what better way to work out the lungs by singing? So I started writing these songs and could barely get out the notes or anything. So every month after that, for 7 months, I wrote another track. And they're all like spiritual songs in English, except for the title track, Distancia, is actually in Spanish and English. But Victory, Blessing, Back to Normal, these are all very dear, heartfelt, emotional, and spiritual songs. A lot of them are like prayers, and it was just being grateful that I got through it. So I was excited to put out that project.
I'm taking all this in, and you transitioned into that's 2020 experience everybody had, right? Crazy. But how you used that as a form of coming back, you use music as your healing. You took something that was downright scary, you turned it around, and you used music to uplift you and to heal you. And that says a lot about who you are in your journey. I'm interested in that song for Abuelita. If you can translate to the audience the title track and why it's called the title track, the meaning behind that song.
Part of my healing process was there was no medication. The doctors were like, hey, good luck, drink water, you know, hopefully you'll live. So I just went back to the old school remedies, one of those being ginger. I remember my grandmother used to make this ginger tea. I didn't realize my grandmother only had one lung. She had an illness when she was younger. I learned that during this time after I was telling my mom about the jengibre. So ginger is an anti-inflammatory. It's a natural thing that comes from the earth. So ginger, lemon, garlic. So I was making these teas. So it was healing. I think it really helped me to heal. So I just had that thought about ginger as a symbol of our ancestors, how they always told us that there were these natural remedies that they would use. And we don't pay no mind until there's no cure. You have no choice but to go back to the ginger. So it was like a reminder. Don't forget about the jengibre that Abuelita told you back in the 70s. And hence the song Jengibre. And it tells that story about, Abuela always told me, jengibre, don't forget about where you come from. Don't forget your ancestors and your roots, ginger root. And I called up my friend William Millan, an amazing musician, person, musical director. He's everything. And I was like, yo, I'd love to work with you on this song. And his brother took it and did his thing. And it was a great experience. It was also a way for me not to think about how horrible things were at that time and allowed me to focus on something great. So I would wake up and have that to do. I wasn't like laying around like, oh my God, I almost died. And again, allowing me to heal through tragedy. I've always found a way to include music as my focus to get me through. I'm blessed to have that.
What does legacy mean to you? And what is your legacy?
I think a legacy is something that you build throughout your lifetime that your children can reflect on once you're gone to say, wow, my dad or my grandfather was this, he built this, whatever that may be. For me, it's healing our community through the arts. That's my legacy.
Gracias, Deiso, for sharing your story. For all my listeners, don't forget to rate and review the show. 5 stars and a little love go a long way. Check the show notes for more info on where you can find Deiso via social media. Next week, we have the president of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, Bob Kendrick. Tune in and tell a friend. Hasta la próxima. Pa'lante.